So hello everyone and welcome to another episode of The Pulse, where we talk to digital health influencers, entrepreneurs, enthusiasts, experts from all over the world. I can't wait to get this conversation started with our guest today. But just before that, a quick reminder to like and follow our LinkedIn page, subscribe to our YouTube channel. We're also on 6 different podcast channels, including Google Podcasts and Spotify. I'm your host, Dr. Maida Fan, and today we have with us Alberto Melon, an MD hematologist, data scientist, and blockchain specialist. He is also a metaverse content creator and is currently working on a Web3 platform that facilitates privacy-enabled health data management. Welcome to the podcast, Alberto.
Well, first of all, I would say that I want to thank you so much, Maida, not just for inviting me and giving me this opportunity to share my thoughts, but also for this great work you're performing with the Pulse podcast. I mean, I honestly think that this is a great endeavor in terms of health literacy, on digital health literacy, and all of this work and sacrifice means a lot for the community in the long term. So thank you very much again. You know, we're on the same ship here. So,
well, thank you so much, Alberto. It means a lot. I truly appreciate it. Thank you for your kind words. And I think that your intro alone was a mouthful. It feels like I've used all the buzzwords in digital health already in the first 10 seconds of this episode. And we'll get into all of that, I'm sure. But first, I'd just like to know a little bit about your background and how you went from, you know, being a hematologist, working in the lab, to now working in the metaverse.
Yeah, it's a great question and the most usual question in this case is, to start with, maybe I'd say I'm something like an engineer trapped inside a doctor's body. I know it may sound weird as a self-description, but I guess it's true in my case. I mean, I've always had this passion about technology, about digital health, and I even started to show some interest in data science and especially big data, like 3-4 years ago, but just as a hobby, you know, just in my free time. So later on, well, you know, eventually it was the COVID pandemic that, as it happened with many other people, somehow made me understood there was something inherently wrong with the system, and there was something uncomfortably wrong with myself, or at least with my role in that system. Okay, so there was something I had previously dealt with as a resident doctor, which was this huge amount of time you could waste just gathering data. Okay, and I'm not just talking about informatic resources. Okay, even if I'm just 36 years old, I had to struggle and to carry these huge paper folders and you know, and make so many trips to carry them and to seek among all of that. Huge amount of data in medical histories. So I thought, well, you know, they always say that time is something very valuable. So there's something inherently wrong with this. I think that we can do better and we must do better. So as I said before, the pandemic arrived and well, I had to work hard on that battlefield with along with all my colleagues. And it was hard and exhausting, but we all suddenly realized that despite all of the sources of information we have nowadays, when it comes to react quickly, this has to be improved somehow. So there was this like a click inside my head. I then started studying hard, first data science, then I started with blockchain as well. And I guess that eventually I realized maybe I could somehow bring a little bit more value working on this rather than what I used to do. So yeah, just a couple of months ago, I decided to jump to bring, get take this step and start this adventure.
Well, I think the pandemic really gave a lot of people their light bulb moment, and where they realized, you know, they could be doing so much more, you know, to help patients. And so let's dive deeper into the metaverse, right? And I really want to pick your brain on that, because there are a lot of areas in healthcare where the metaverse is already being explored. So for example, not only for direct patient care, but in medical education, clinical simulations, and then you have AR, VR assisted surgeries. And it's really amazing to see the potential of the metaverse really being used today. And really, I think it makes room for more accessibility and flexibility when it comes to complex clinical situations. And so based on your firsthand, since you're already working in the metaverse, I wanted to know from you, what are some other applicable use cases that can truly impact patients' lives through the metaverse? Yeah.
Of course, absolutely. I mean, these use cases that you've mentioned are obviously priceless, but well, first of all, as I always do with my students and residents when I work in a hospital, I like to start always with definitions, because sometimes we already think that we're talking about the same thing, but somehow this etymologic or semantic discussions are important. I recently found a definition of the metaverse that I especially liked, because it's more, you know, like something more global. It was something like, it's the concept of an interconnected digital experience that complements and works in tandem with the physical world. It doesn't refer to any specific type of technology. Rather, it uses a blend of technologies to create a fully immersive experience. Okay, I think this is quite a right approach or a right definition for this concept. So this is just to say that it is not just about virtual reality that already existed before in the end. It is not about distance, but it's about building bridges to remove those distance. Okay, so in relation to augmented reality, for example, one of the most known you know, technologies or devices that we could use within the metaverse, I would add some more use cases or potential use cases, because some of them are already being used, I mean, successfully, but some of them are not yet, or at least as far as I know. We're talking about education, for example, anatomy or physiology lessons.
Yeah.
You know, we'll remember those, you know, those episodes of the famous TV shows, Dr. House, that we could see
yeah.
such a beautiful bunch of animations with blood vessels and immune system cells and so on. And that kind of overlapping visual experiences could be priceless somehow for students in several topics. We're talking about rehabilitation as well. I mean, we'll know that every recovery process is driven far better if you're home somehow, or surrounded by your family or your beloved ones, or you find yourself in a known place. So why shouldn't you give this little help to your senses to overcome this pain or this weakness? And then there's consultation, or even the visit pass of admitted patients in hospital beds could become a much more intuitive experience. I mean, just imagine for a while these typically complicated elderly patients with so many conditions and a huge medical history, no matter if we talk about acute or chronic disease. I mean, what if you could somehow visualize all of them, all of that medical history at a glance? I mean, literally seeing it. I mean, just by yeah. looking at the patients and seeing, for example, playing with imagination, seeing a liver disease or lung disease with color effects or superposition mm-hmm. or overlapping with imaging tests. So in the moment you see the patient in bed or are your consultation, you quickly see which one's the previous problem. You can focus on the solution, or you can quickly access to all of the small details that you have to focus
yeah.
on. I mean, in the end, I hate to, I used to hate to receive patients in a consultation and just keep working on a computer. And in the end, we're talking about an interaction, the relationship between patient and a physician, and even
yeah.
with nurses as well, should be direct, not with a screen. And it's like a paradox that we think that these kind of solutions may separate patients and professionals. And I think it's exactly the other way around. It's just something
yeah.
that may help you to directly interact with patients. So these are just few cases. I mean, possibilities are endless. I've recently read a paper about another use case that I hadn't heard about yet, which would be an AR-based solution for medication weight establishment. I mean, you know that the medication dosage for each kind of population, mm-hmm. for the elderly, for young people, for,
yeah.
Depending on your weight and so many conditions, could be easily customized or personalized just by seeing the patient. And if we could just adjust the correct dosage for that kind of patient, it could be a powerful tool. And yeah. In fact, I mean, I think that I have here. Like the results of the study were very interesting. I mean, like 80% were correct identifying the cutting position of the pills or the drugs. So in the end, I think this is a very powerful tool in many ways, and that's just about the augmented reality. I mean, not to mention virtual reality, which we use in one of the projects I'm collaborating with, which is called EB Health. Okay, it's basically focused on enabling this immersive framework.
I will ask you more about that. I'm just going to pause you for a second because I don't want to give everything away.
Yeah, of course. I will get to your project.
No, that's fine. I will definitely ask you about the project, but you did mention some very poignant points here in which you were referring to treating the terminally ill and how this is like a paradox and the human touch and the human interaction. And so with all these great advancements in the metaverse and in healthcare, you have your share of skeptics and you have your share of critics, right? Mm-hmm. And so there are a lot of people that say, that question, you know, the use of gamification or video games in treating or pain management, for example, in terminally ill patients. Or there are other people who point out, you know, grassroots level concerns, saying that, you know, how does this virtual universe solve problems like health inequities and mass access to care? And community health, for example. So, you know, I really want your opinion on that or your take on that is that there's a lot of buzz going around that metaverse is a game changer for healthcare, but is it the answer to all our problems?
Mm-hmm. Well, it might not be the answer to all of our problems, as you already know, because I think that nothing yet is the answer to all of our problems. But I would make the question the other way around. So has it so many problems than it seems? I mean, in the end, all of these kind of criticism or skepticals have to do the same exercise that we do to understand what kind of problems do we already have? Not the theoretical problems that we could have with this kind of technology, but problems that we already have and how do things work nowadays with that? In terms of games to improve patient outcomes, for example, or gamification in general, it's not like a theory, it's like a fact. I mean, in the end, this kind of approach of sort of gamification of routinary tasks, it really works. I mean, in the end, it's like an incentive for people. I'm not just talking about patients, but any kind of industry. And I mean, in the end, we are human beings. We have emotions. And if we have some, as they say, some skin in the game, we have this additional incentive, even if it's like something like a game. But it's not necessary that way. I mean, we can do this. We can make this approach or we can obviously don't use this kind of approach at all, this gamification at all. In terms of lack of human touch, I would say it's more like the opposite, as I said before. I mean, this is something that pretends to build bridges, not to enable distance. So in the end, I've mentioned it before. It's something that precisely helps us in that task. It's not a problem, but a solution in this sense. In relation to hardware or technical problems, I mean, obviously, as I said before, with the initial definition of the concept of the metaverse itself, it does not depend on a particular technology. Obviously, the more devices that you have or the more, technologic solutions that you have will eventually help you to improve this experience. But it's not necessary. I mean, you don't need this. When we talk about metaverse, we usually think about this kind of devices, but you don't need nothing related to that. You don't need this device or any other smaller for augmented reality. You could use, you could not use, but, play a role in the metaverse with no type of device, with no device at all. I mean,
it's a very important point, actually, because that's what people say, that you need the hardware, you need the software, and then it's about logistics, about providing this hardware to the patients to actually be able to use it and gain benefit from it. So it's a very good point, Alberto.
Yeah,
I appreciate that you mentioned. Yeah, go ahead. Please continue.
Yeah, no, no. I totally agree with you. I mean, in the end, you don't need not even a screen. I mean, as they say, the stuff is happening, no matter if you can see it or not. The fact that you can see it or that you can feel like immersed on it will improve your experience, but it will happen anyway. That's something like the concept of the data metaverse that we may eventually talk about it later on. So in the end, it happens today with selective sectors. I mean, of course, it could be like quite a little bit selective in some terms, like the rest of technologies. I mean, in the end, this is a solution, a tool. So we just have to be aware of these technologies and integrate them. So those use cases will eventually come up as we can solve real problems with them. Right. Not the opposite. Not try to find use cases so we can justify its use or try to apply it everywhere, but just to be aware of it. So this is my point of view. All of the previously mentioned stories will help us to spread awareness about it among professionals and patients.
No, I think that's great and such a good segue into my next question that is about data, because I think you mentioned in the beginning that you had all this patient data, you were carrying it around and you wanted to do something useful with it. And so we all know that healthcare differs from other industries because it's based on a unique framework, you know, that's centered around ethics and safety and patient privacy. And that's really where data comes in. And I know that you're working on a platform or a project that enables a secure health data management. And so please tell me a little bit more about that and what you're doing, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I guess this is the million-dollar question. Okay. So, well, you know, data science, as you know, try to bring solutions to some previously unsolved problems regarding management of huge amounts of data, what it happens with healthcare data. But not just that. I mean, it gives us some tools to effectively use this data to understand it and even to build predictive models that allows us to predict outcomes, which is obviously very interesting in healthcare. So here again, we deal with privacy and security concerns that are not always guaranteed with current technologies. So here's where blockchain comes into the picture. Well, as I did before, I like to start with definitions. Well, first of all, I'd rather talk about DLTs, which stands for distributed ledger technologies, rather than just blockchain, because as you already know, there are some other distributed ledger technologies such as DAG, which stands for direct acyclic graph. And you know, just to summarize briefly, that blockchain is like a chain of blocks, as its name says, with a lot of transactions that get validated into these blocks by all of the community, no matter if you do it with a computation effort, like what's called proof of work, or with the participation of all the network, which would be the proof of stake. Instead, with DAG, what we have is not a singular chain, but something more similar to a tree, which each transaction validates the rest of the transaction, and here's where the strength of the system relies. Of course, each one of these technologies has its strengths and its weaknesses, but in the end, both DLTs somehow enable similar applications, and both would be considered as part of this so-called Web3 paradigm or environment, and this is very important. I mean, the question: can metaverse exist without blockchain? Well, obviously, the answer is yes. I mean, as I said before, there are other DLTs that enable this Web3 ownership internet. But if we say, can metaverse exist without Web3? I'd rather say, yes, it can, but it shouldn't, at least in my opinion. I mean, you know, immersive experiences and virtual reality already existed 20 and 30 years ago. That's not new. Mm-hmm. That's not something that's new. The new big thing here is to make this interoperable, composable, decentralized, and not just interactive, but also empowering. That would be the word. Okay, so in these terms, here's where we are more or less building, okay, the project that I'm more committed to it. So basically, what we are building is a blockchain-based healthcare data management solution to allow patients be the real owners of their data, okay? So they can have 24/7 hours access to their medical data in a 100% confidential and constantly updated way through the use of the so-called dynamic NFTs. Okay, we were all very aware about this word, the NFTs word, and you know, most people think that it's something just related to collectibles or art or, yeah. or data, and there's nothing wrong about that. But this is like just the spike of all the bunch of possible use cases that this have. It's like eventually to prove digital ownership, just to summarize. It's not, maybe it's not the most correct definition, but it's what enables. And to, as I said before, we would use these so-called dynamic NFTs to eventually even monetize this value they generate. Okay. Not just talking about net income, but for example, you know, extra medical services or assessment, or even donations to scientific research or any other cause they want to support. I mean, even we can set some customized health targets so they can even go further with monetization and in case of achieving these targets. So in the end, this is what we call empowering patients. Okay, basically what we offer is this. We can deploy this by basically combining two different blockchain technologies. One of them would be what we call an oracle. It's in essentially something that feed the blockchain with off-chain real-world data, validating it on a decentralized and secure manner. And the other one is a like confidential secure enclave that allows us to tokenize data. So it's the owner, the patient, who decide whether he or she wants to share it or not. But again, the most important thing, apart from security and confidentiality, is to empower him, to give him or her the possibility to be the right owner of this information, to get access to it and to eventually monetize it, because it's the value they're generating. All of this is about building awareness of the value they generate. However, well, we're still in a very early and initial stage, but we're starting to making some significant advances already. And the other project I was talking about before, of EB Health, is like more something more focused on just the virtual reality environment for not just education, but also for telehealth and teleconsultation and things like that. So this would be, I'm just like an advisor to this second okay. project, and I'm like the original mind behind the first one. So we're on that.
Well, amazing, point. Amazing, and thank you. And I just love the way you're driving this conversation. You're literally doing my job for me. This is such an effortless podcast. I appreciate it.
No, I mean, it's my fault. I start talking, and I'm easily.
No, I appreciate. I mean, you know, I appreciate it. And I just because we're building up, and I think you're automatically just effortlessly driving me towards my next question. And so I know we're almost at time, and I really want to ask you a little bit about patient awareness. You know, I talk a lot about awareness. I know you believe in patient awareness, and what especially concerning the rights that they have to their own medical data and to their health data. And so just touch very briefly about the fundamentals of patient rights to their data and something that they should know about. And I believe most patients don't.
Hmm. Well, I mean, as I said before, it's basically a human right. I mean, the thing is that reality, at least in my opinion, or at least we can check out data easily. Reality is quite a bit far from theory nowadays, and this is what we try to solve or at least to improve. Okay, there are a lot of situations in which you know, not just patients but users in general are not aware of a problem. I mean, in the end, we are here to solve problems, but there are a lot of, in many situations, we are not aware of these problems. Okay. Here's the fact that when we work as physicians or as nurses or any other kind of healthcare professional, we can see things from behind the curtain, if you allow me this expression, and we can understand how things are done in the kitchen. So we realize that there are a lot of things that they should have access to. For example, I mean, we always say that this medical data belongs to the patients. I mean, this is more or less worldwide. I mean, maybe there's some countries that not that way, but basically it's something that I could call a human right. But when we take this to reality, we realize that, okay, if I'm a patient, for example, I want to get access to my latest, you know, informs or my latest medical records, or perhaps some analytics that I was made like 2 years ago. And it's not easy. Not easy. I mean, even if we are talking about private institution, it's not extremely easy, at least in most of cases. So in the end, I mean, you have to start a bureaucratic process to claim this information, to get the latest version of feeds. There's a lot of time that happens between you. Make this claim and you get information. So it's like a bunch of problems in the end. Nowadays we live in this global world with I don't want to talk about any specific organization, but I think that we are all aware about these big companies that make business with data. I mean, I think that there's nothing inherently wrong with that, but there's some ingredient of unfairness if you realize that we are the protagonists of this story and we are not getting any value in return. So this is like the topic that we wanted to focus on. I mean, not just the usual thing about the right to get access to your data, but also the right to get somehow. And I'm not just talking about just economic rewards, as I said before. Yeah, yeah. We can talk about value in many ways, or even about bringing that value to another cause, to research.
It's your point that you mentioned about incentivizing healthcare. I think that's so important.
That's the word.
And I think that's so important. And just before we wrap up, Alberto, where do you see healthcare in 10 years?
Sorry, I didn't get.
Where do you see healthcare in 10 years?
I don't know. I mean, obviously, that's a hard question. I mean, maybe our main challenges here with these highly promising technologies are regulation, compliance, and this kind of issues. I mean, it's normal. I mean, it's something I understand. We're talking about sensitive topics, and we're talking about human rights, after all. But again, it's just a matter of time. When the authorities start to see the nature and the underlying mechanism of these technologies, as well as their successful use cases that are already being deployed, I think regulation and standardization will naturally start to flow, in my opinion. So this will be the main challenges that we have to focus in this direction and to be sure of humanizing these technologies. I don't know if you would like to some conclusions already or maybe later
please,
on.
Yeah, please, a key takeaway, a message.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Right. Okay, so to summarize, I would say about, to highlight some key take-home messages, I would talk about awareness, education. I mean, this is just beginning, just that the potential is there, and the best possible speaker is to see these working in real world, solving real problems. The second one would be prevention over treatment. Okay, this is one thing that we particularly aim at our project, to sell these incentives for improving healthcare, not just to receive the service, but to try to improve your health so we can improve overall health. And yet we should humanize technology, no matter if we're talking about AI, metaverse, blockchain, I mean, or at least let these technologies to show up their human side. I've already seen it. I mean, I've been to several conferences, work groups, live events. Of course, there are a lot of things to improve, but you can easily realize it's something different. Okay, this should be something built by communities for communities, and hopefully we're going to make it. And at least, but not last, I say to unleash the power of this data. Okay, to realize the high value we all generate and its potential for all the worldwide society. If well understood, this can be definitely game changing, and this could accelerate or boost my biomedical research in decades. So we are just at the beginning of this road.
Well, amazing. I really had fun. This is not my area of expertise. I'm just sitting as a student in this podcast, to be honest. And I appreciate Absolutely. It. I really do. Thank you so much for your time, Alberto. And thank you for sharing these valuable insights.
Thank you so much. On the contrary, as I said before, you're performing a great work with this project, and I'm absolutely glad to contribute to it. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Appreciate it. And for everyone listening, take care of yourselves. Until next time. Bye-bye.